and welcome to Bunker Start Your Week. I'm Roz Taylor, and joining me is Hannah Fern. Hello, Hannah.
Hello.
Our public services are in good shape, apparently. That's what the Tory party chairman, Greg Hands, said yesterday, which I must admit came as something of a surprise to me. After the four-day juniors doctor strike last week, we found out that Royal College of Nursing members have rejected the latest pay offer from the government. What was that pay offer, Hannah? And were we expecting the nurses to reject it?
So the deal that was on the table was a 5% rise for nurses, but also a one-off cash payment, which was sort of in lieu of lost wages last year to acknowledge that they had been underpaid last year too. But a balance of RCN members did reject it by 54% voting to vote it down, even though the government has called this a final offer. So there's nothing else sitting on the table to come back to discuss right now. And yes, we were expecting them to accept it, in fact, because other healthcare workers represented by Unison, including ambulance staff, paramedics and so on, had accepted this deal. So yes, the decision among members came as a surprise to the union's leadership, I think, and they've now hastily organised another 48-hour walkout at the beginning of May to show that they're committed to strike action and to representing their members. But this was unexpected.
It's a difficult position for the leader of the Royal College of Nursing, isn't it, Pat Cullen, because she seems to have underestimated how angry her members were.
Yeah, I mean, the membership, a part of it at least, that 54%, is clearly very radicalised now and feels incredibly let down and expected more from the government. And unions themselves now internally fear that this could essentially split nurses and weaken their bargaining power, because some nurses did want to accept it and do want to move on and want that immediate rise. So in response, Cullen has come out hard and is talking about rolling strikes right up until Christmas. But it's difficult to see how they could force the government back to the table when this could be a useful kind of bedding in point for the government to stick to their commitment to that 5%.
And these strikes will be worse than the ones that came before, won't they?
Yes, they could be, because they are coordinated to line up with junior doctors as well. So, yeah, it could have a very significant impact on the NHS. In fact, you would expect them to say some of this, but the groups that represent managers in the NHS have been very clear about their concern about the impact on patients. So NHS providers, which is the group that represents people like NHS chief execs and chairs of trusts and so on, has described them as unsustainable and also said that the union threats are what they call an ugly situation. So they're really escalating their language there. And Matthew Taylor, who is the chief executive of the NHS Confederation, listeners may remember him from, you know, being very close to Blair in the Blair years and the policy unit there. He's even described this as uncharted territory. And you know, his conversation about this has been kind of more, not sympathetic, because that's not a position he can put himself in, but certainly more kind of understanding of the tensions, you know, within the NHS and the needs for nurses to be fairly rewarded. So to hear him talking about those fears is a kind of a pause for thought, really.
Yes, and the RCN is also planning to stop doing A&E and cancer care as well, which obviously takes...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, they stop. There's always a workaround. So patients are never left in a critical condition without support. But yes, once you step down from some of those really important areas like cancer care, that really does, I suppose, state your intention, doesn't it? That it's a real bedding in of their position.
And the Shadow Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, was out and about at the weekend doing interviews, and he said he didn't support those NHS strikes, which is still at odds with the majority of public opinion, isn't it?
It is. He said that, and he also appeared in another interview, essentially not committing to any position on Labour's intention around a pay deal, you know, what it would do in the government's position. He really hesitated to commit, and that's put a lot of people's backs up. And as you say, the latest polling overall suggests that public support for union action in general, so the nurses' strike but also other public sector strikes, is actually rising despite the strikes ongoing, which is sort of the opposite of what we might expect. And yes, the majority do still support nurses and junior doctors. So an interesting one there. We don't normally see it happen in that way.
Do you think public opinion will change before the politicians' positions do?
It's possible. I think it is. You would say historically that that is quite likely, that once action is ongoing, it becomes very disruptive to people's lives, that their position on it changes and they become more opposed as time goes on. But actually, that's not what the polling is showing right now. But I think it is a risk, especially for Labour. If Labour doesn't have a clear position, it looks like they're just kind of flailing around. I think it's hard to say exactly how it will go because it's not following the usual pattern at this point.
So we had a lot of talk about winter of discontent back a few months ago when all these strikes were starting. And now we're moving into a summer of discontent, aren't we?
And maybe even an autumn of discontent. I mean, as we said, Pat Cullen from the RCN has said strikes right up until Christmas if they don't get a deal their members are happy with.
And there's also strikes in education. Next week, teachers are going on strike on the 27th. This is turning into a nightmare for parents, isn't it? Because it's moving into multiple weeks of disruption after so much was lost during the pandemic.
It is. It's a nightmare for parents. Personally, I'm dreading it. Sitting here on the final day of the Easter holidays, I'm not looking forward to more days off. Also, as you say, the pandemic, I think people are genuinely worried about lost days of education for their children. It's a lot of disruption to their education. But it's really important to remember that teachers, when we talk about that disruption and the irritation for parents, that they don't provide childcare. They provide a public service, which is the education of children, and they can't do that well without really good terms and conditions that reflect the significance, importance of their job in our society. So the fact that it's a complete pain in the ass for me and others, and it's really beside the point. And I think, you know, generally we need to just get behind it and find a way to absorb that disruption personally. I mean, amusingly, every sort of class WhatsApp note that I've seen about discussing the strikes and the strike dates has been appended with a note of people saying, of course, I support the strikes. I think there is genuinely that appetite of at the moment to get behind our kids' teachers. But yeah, it is disruptive.
Yeah, I'm not seeing any anger either from other parents. So with all this disruption and the local elections just 2.5 weeks off now, Labour really ought to be confident of making some pretty impressive gains, shouldn't it?
It should be. Let's hope so. So in terms of the polls, they are actually tightening a bit. So that's something that Keir Starmer needs to be very aware of. It was a great piece by John Harris in The Guardian this weekend about this. So worth having a look at that. But the current sort of polls suggest that Labour are on 45 and Conservatives on 29 and Lib Dems on 10 now. When Sunak took over as PM, that was a 51-24 gap. So that's, you know, that is shrinking quite significantly. And for Labour, voter ID is going to be an issue as well in terms of turnout and, you know, getting their vote share to the ballot. So, yeah, interesting to see what happens there.
Do we know how the polls are tightening? I saw some research that suggested it was people who had been don't-knows in previous polls turning back to the Conservatives.
Yeah, exactly. There's some of that don't knows going to the Conservatives. And there's also Labour are losing some individuals over certain on the left over certain policy points. And one of them I already mentioned is they're wavering over coming out in full support of strikers. The other is obviously the issue around trans rights and so on, which is seeing some of the left, hard left, leaving Labour. And also there are some women who are, you would describe, on the centre-right potentially, who are also feeling that Labour aren't strong enough on women and girls' rights. So that's a real minefield for them as well, whereas Conservatives have a kind of clear line on that. Yeah, there are a number of policy issues that Labour haven't really tackled, I think, and it's causing people to move around in a way they hadn't done before.
It doesn't feel like a very happy ship, in particular this row over the Labour ad that attacked Rishi Sunak for allegedly thinking that child abusers shouldn't go to jail. And this was such a strange ad to put out.
Really strange, really weird. Where did it come from? This is not a talking point that people were already aware of or on. Strange choice when there's been so much they could pick from to really grapple that issue. They could look at, you know, the billions of wasted funds spent on unusable PPE in the pandemic. There's so many issues that touch people's lives very more directly and personally at the moment, and they chose none of those. It's quite odd.
There was a theory that they were trying to go after Sunak because he was seen as the strongest asset the Tories had.
Yes. The depressing thing about that is that some of the discussion was around had they tried to use his image as a, you know, British Asian man and link it to the, you know, the failure of the British state to deal with some elements of grooming in areas like Rochdale among communities of you know, Asian men. I don't think it was that cynical. If it was, that's very depressing. And, you know, I hope somebody would expose that by a piece of public interest journalism. I don't think it was that. I think it's just a kind of failure to really connect with what people are actually talking about. There's so much you can go for Sunak on. And I'm really confused about why they sort of alighted on that particular issue. But now the sort of the harm is sort of done there now, I think. It's irritated the kind of strong Labour vote who are actually wavering because of individuals like Wes Streeting. So if Labour lose a lot of people into don't knows or ballot spoiling, we could end up in a situation that's much closer to a hung parliament than any of us were expecting at a general election maybe 6 months ago.
Let's move to Scotland. On Tuesday, the new Scottish First Minister, Hamza Yousaf, is going to set out his priorities, and he's got First Minister's questions as well later in the week. What kind of start has he got off to?
Well, his fresh start is going to be sort of immediately overshadowed by his predecessor. So what most Scottish people are chatting about this morning is that one of Yousaf's first acts, may be that he has to suspend Nicola Sturgeon from the party because a leaked email has shown that she blocked plans to hire a fundraising manager for the SNP who was an individual that others had approved. And this is important because, as you all know, her husband has been arrested and is being investigated over alleged financial irregularities in the party. So, you know, Hamza Yousaf now claims that the party's finances are balanced and secure, and he's doubling down on fighting the Westminster legal challenge to Scottish gender reforms. He's reiterated his commitment to another independence referendum. And yes, on Tuesday, we'll hear much more about his platform as an individual. But this is this overshadowing is a huge problem for him, because all people are talking about still is Sturgeon and her handling of the party and her legacy. So it's very difficult for him to strike out as a future of the SNP when facing that grey cloud above him.
It is extraordinary, because it was only a couple of months ago that when she resigned, which was obviously quite a shock, people, including myself, were saying, you know, gone out on a high, you know, yeah, SNP, and now it has just all fallen apart.
Absolutely. It does raise a lot of questions about why she resigned when she did, doesn't it? It suggests that she knew what was coming and was trying to control that narrative. And, you know, she's failed to do that now.
And there just seems to be a lot of low-level sleaze. And there was an issue about a camper van that
happened. Yes, yeah, the camper van.
Did not have been purchased.
So surprise, actually, seeing it all unravel now, the surprising thing, in a way, and one thing I sort of admire her for, is that she managed to keep a lid on this for decades, didn't she? I mean, if all of this was going on, how remarkable that we're only hearing about it now, once she did at least try to make her kind of clean break and exit stage left, as it were. But yes, not much hope for Yousaf to move on from that with it all going on this week.
No. The big event coming up later this week that's in Westminster but not in Parliament is a very large protest, which XR, Extinction Rebellion, are holding. They're calling it the big one. This is different from the group that tried to disrupt the Grand National at the weekend. Tell us about that.
So this was a large protest organised by a group called Animal Rising, who are essentially a campaign group around the way we treat animals in this country, an animal rights activist group. They delayed the start of the Grand National by bringing hundreds of their individuals into the site, scaling fences, attaching themselves to the jumps and so on. 118 people were arrested on the day. But actually, only 68 were still in custody the next day. So, you know, a large number of arrests there as police tried to clamp down heavily on protest, as we know they are encouraged to do by the government now. So I would say, you know, it's interesting. What we're seeing here is a radicalisation of protest, I think. You know, large numbers turning out for these events, and also police feeling increasingly motivated to arrest as many as they can. So what that leaves an interesting dynamic for this event that we're calling the big one in Westminster, and one to watch, I expect.
And in fact, one of the horses running in the Grand National died, Hill 16.
Yeah, in fact, there were three deaths over the whole weekend, so the whole meet at Aintree, three horse deaths. So, I mean, it does raise those questions that there are animals do die every time we have large meetings like that. And it's rarely talked about, actually, apart from by groups like Animal Rising. So I wonder if it is time for us to start having more of a conversation about the impact that those kind of events do have.
Now, there's a big conference about Northern Ireland continuing all this week to mark the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. And there are various luminaries speaking, people who we don't hear from very often anymore. Bill Clinton, well, we do hear from Tony Blair quite a bit, but kind of. Is this going to actually lead to any tangible progress in the form of the DUP actually going back into government in Northern Ireland?
So the DUP have not shown any inclination that they're about to go back to Stormont yet, despite the fact that they are, as you say, being lobbied from all sides. So they had Biden last week, and then over the weekend the former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern was very involved, giving his view and really aggressively lobbying for them to return. And now Bill and Hillary Clinton, who are obviously attending this 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement conference, which is going on this week, they're being called in to see if they can do the job, but no sign of compromise yet. So yeah, nothing moving, really.
Well, if the sight of Bill Clinton talking to you can't move you, I remember at a Labour Party conference where he spoke and everybody was absolutely rapt. The journalists would not admit it, but they were completely bowled over by his public speaking. Mm. It was extraordinary. But did Joe Biden's rather brief visit to Northern Ireland, he seemed to head off to the kind of prettier bits of Ireland quite fast and didn't spend much time in Belfast and Northern Ireland at all. Did he achieve anything at all?
I didn't seem to achieve much for Ireland at all. It maybe gave him a sort of personal warm glow because he's obviously much better received over there than he is at home at the moment. And I suppose in terms of the other impact, it kind of gave Sunak an opportunity to look like a bit of a global statesperson or guardian of the union and so on, although he didn't really pick up on that opportunity in the way he could. I don't know. It'd be embarrassing for Biden if the Clintons do better this week, I think, because he didn't really achieve very much.
Now, war has broken out in Sudan. Tell us what happened over the weekend.
So Sudan has been an incredibly complicated place since the 2019 uprising that ousted Omar al-Bashir, who was a dictator. And there have been efforts now to transition to a democracy, a civilian-led democracy, but they have failed. And what we're seeing now happening on the ground is clashes between Sudan's military and its paramilitary force, who are sort of the two main factions controlling the country. And this is all very incredibly complex, but because they are now essentially facing off against one another, control of the Khartoum presidential palace is in doubt, and the airport as well. There are at least 100 dead this morning and at least 1,000 injured, and their explosions are continuing. It's escalating all the time. Hospitals are running out of blood. The internet has been switched off. All of those things that we see. You know, and aid agencies have paused food aid work in the nation now. So this is a significant issue for the country, and it does have, it's a volatile situation that impacts not only that nation, but, you know, the whole region. There are people who suspect this will drive more migrants to Italy. Obviously, there are huge human rights issues around the power of militia and so on. So, yeah, that is a significant, significant issue.
Finally, next weekend, we're all going to get an emergency alert on our mobiles.
Yes.
What is this alert going to say?
It will say, this is a test of emergency alerts, a new UK government service that will warn you if there's a life-threatening emergency nearby. In a real emergency, follow the instructions in the alert and keep yourself and others safe. And then aloud at the end, this is a test. You do not need to take any action, just as a reassurance.
Yes, apparently it will still sound even if your phone is on silent. And the only way to avoid
it's off. I think it can turn your phone on, actually. Or at least it has the functionality to do that. Yes. So, yeah, it's, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about, you know, jokes about the kind of, what was it called, when the wind blows and so on. Would you want to know if you've got 10 minutes left before civilization of you, as you have known it, crumbles? I don't know if I would. But yeah, I mean, more seriously, it probably will have quite a useful purpose, actually.
What scale of disaster would trigger a message like this?
Localized emergencies that could threaten life. So flooding, fire, and obviously that's increasingly likely here in the UK with climate change. We think of it as an Australian problem or a Californian problem, large bushfires. But actually, a couple of years ago, we did see outbreaks of fire here in the UK. And so that's something we need to think about. And other severe weather warnings and so on. So anything that's happening locally that poses a danger to life. Interestingly, in the US, they actually use this for other things as well, like missing persons, so to help find, you know, missing children and so on who've disappeared, dangerous criminals who they're trying to apprehend or who've escaped from prison or so on, the images of what they look like. I think that's quite useful. We don't seem to be committing to doing that at all. But there we are. That's another functionality that could be useful.
Yeah, the police were searching a house opposite me yesterday, and I have to say I enjoyed a full view through the window, and curtain twitching excitement.
We are quite nosy. I definitely would like to know what's going on. If someone sent it straight to my phone, great.
And that's it for Bunker Start Your Week. Thanks so much, Hannah.
Thank you.
You can support The Bunker by searching Patch In Bunker Podcast, and that helps keep us going. And we have a couple of shout outs for Patreon backers. Here's Hannah with today's.
Thanks so much to Never Give Up, Philip, and Susan Leeper.
Have a decent week, everyone, and don't freak out when you get your scary message on the mobile on Sunday.
Hello, I'm Ros Taylor with news of Oh God, What Now?, the politics podcast that's never going to leave its voter ID at home. On Friday's show, it's 6 months until the US election and Donald Trump is stuck sitting on trial in a New York courthouse. Is he bulletproof or can Joe Biden turn around the polls? In the second half, it's local elections week, but we've steadily taken power away from local authorities. What if we gave it back? And in the extra bit for supporters, is there a right level of ruthlessness in politics? That's Oh God, What Now? With me, Ros Taylor, Raphael Baer, Hannah Fearn, guest Nikki McCann Ramirez, out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Start Your Week from The Bunker was written and presented by Ros Taylor with Hannah Fearn. The producer was Kasia Tomaszewicz, with audio production by me, Jay Bailey. The lead producer is Jacob Jarvis, and the group editor is Andrew Harrison, with music by Kenny Dickinson. Start Your Week from The Bunker is a Podmasters production.